Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We were by the school gates. I went out to get things for my children when the strike hit. A huge explosion. People were flying in all directions. There were no ambulances. It took about an hour and 40 minutes to arrive, and people were thrown all around. Civilians who are not affiliated with Hamas, Fatah, or any other faction.
Israel's ordered all civilians to leave Gaza City a day after an Israeli airstrike on a school near Khan Yunis killed at least 30 displaced Palestinians, including many women and children. We'll go to Gaza. Then to Palestinian physician and politician Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He's usually in Ramallah, but today is in Washington, D.C. And dozens of world leaders are in D.C. to mark the 75th anniversary of the NATO military alliance. We'll speak to a German lawmaker who came to D.C. to protest the summit.
We need peace instead of NATO. We need, at long last, to stand up for democratic and popular sovereignty and to reject the indignity of being a vassal state of Washington, which is just about all we have gotten from the ruling coalition in Berlin. Peace, not NATO.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's armies drop leaflets across Gaza City, ordering all residents to leave their homes and shelters immediately, setting off a fresh wave of panicked evacuations. On Tuesday, at least 30 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli airstrike on a school housing displaced people near Khan Yunis. Eyewitnesses said the Israeli attack resulted in body parts flying through the air. Most of the dead were women and children.
Suddenly and without prior warning, rockets were fired towards a number of people who were connecting to an internet hotspot. They are not fighters. They did not have any weapons and were not involved in any resistance operations. They were civilians and mostly children. I was there at the site and most of the people were killed or critically wounded. None of us had any weapons or anything related to the resistance. It was in Khan Yunis in Abasa at the gates of the school used as a shelter.
The Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza decried the attack as a, quote, heinous massacre against displaced citizens, unquote. It was the fourth Israeli attack on a school over the past 4 days in Gaza. On Tuesday, a panel of United Nations independent experts declared in an open letter Israel's engaged in a campaign of starvation and genocide in Gaza. Michael Fakhry, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, and nine others write, quote, "We declare that Israel's intentional and targeted starvation campaign against the Palestinian people is a form of genocidal violence and has resulted in famine across all of Gaza. We call upon the international community to prioritize the delivery of humanitarian aid by land by any means necessary, end Israel's siege, and establish a ceasefire," unquote. After headlines, we'll go to Gaza to speak with the journalist Akram El-Sathari. In the occupied West Bank, mourners laid the body of 13-year-old Palestinian Hassan Gharib Zahran to rest Tuesday. The boy was killed when Israeli troops fired live ammunition at several children during a raid in Ramallah. The boy's death brings the number of Palestinians killed in the West Bank since last October to more than 570. 137 of them are children. Members of the United Nations Security Council have condemned Russia's assault on civilian sites across Ukraine Monday morning that killed at least 42 people and injured 300 others. Among the dead were two adults killed when Russia bombed Ukraine's largest children's hospital in Kyiv and seven people who died when Russia struck a maternity and fertility clinic in Kyiv. This is UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Joyce Masuya.
Let me remind this council that hospitals have special protection under international humanitarian law. Intentionally directing attacks against a protected hospital is a war crime, and perpetrators must be held to account.
Russia's UN ambassador, who chaired Tuesday's Security Council meeting, blamed Ukrainian air defenses for the explosion at the Children's Hospital. That's a finding contradicted by a UN human rights monitor. The UN says more than 11,000 civilians across Ukraine have been killed and 22,000 injured since Russia's 2022 invasion. Healthcare facilities and medical workers have faced nearly 1,900 attacks. President Biden's welcomed heads of state from NATO member nations to Washington, D.C. for talks marking the 75th anniversary of the nuclear armed military alliance. Biden opened the three-day summit Tuesday evening with a speech that celebrated NATO's expansion from 12 NATO states in 1949 to 32 nations today. Biden pledged further NATO support for Ukraine against Russia's invasion.
The United States, Germany, the Netherlands, Romania, and Italy will provide Ukraine with the equipment for 5 additional strategic air defense systems. And in the coming months, the United States and our partners intend to provide Ukraine with dozens of additional tactical air defense systems. The United States will make sure that when we export critical air defense interceptors, Ukraine goes to the front of the line.
On Tuesday, President Biden awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the United States' highest civilian honor, to outgoing NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. We'll have more on the NATO summit later in the broadcast. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has wrapped up a two-day visit to Moscow, where he met with Russian President Vladimir Putin. It was Modi's first visit to Russia since Putin's 2022 invasion of Ukraine. Modi so far refused to condemn Russia's actions and has abstained from UN votes denouncing the invasion. India remains the second largest purchaser of Russian oil after China. After the talks, Modi offered limited criticism of Putin's attacks on Ukraine.
संघर्ष हो आतंकवादी हमले हो मानव
When it is war, conflict, or a terrorist attack, any person who believes in humanity feels pain when they see death, especially when innocent children are killed. The sight of innocent children dying shatters your heart, and that pain is very terrifying. I had a detailed discussion on the issue with you.
On Tuesday, Putin awarded Modi the Order of St. Andrew the Apostle, Russia's highest civilian award. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky blasted Modi for his literal embrace of Putin. On social media, Zelensky wrote, quote, "It's a huge disappointment and a devastating blow to peace efforts to see the leader of the world's largest democracy hug the world's most bloody criminal in Moscow on such a day," unquote. French far-right leader Marine Le Pen has joined Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban in a new conservative coalition in the European Parliament. The alliance, dubbed Patriots for Europe, is the largest ever far-right bloc in the Parliament's history. This comes just days after a newly formed leftist coalition defeated Le Pen's National Rally Party in Sunday's final round of a heated snap parliamentary election in France. Jordan Bardella, who is poised to be the National Rally's candidate for prime minister, is now president of the new EU far-right bloc. Italy's far-right leader Matteo Salvini also announced plans to join the alliance, which includes members of Spain's Vox Party. This comes as French prosecutors have launched an investigation into Marine Le Pen 2022 campaign finances over accusations of embezzlement, forgery, and fraud. The West African bloc ECOWAS says the region is facing disintegration after 3 military-ruled countries established their own bloc over the weekend. Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, which all experienced military takeovers in recent years, have formed the Alliance of Sahel States, or AES, holding their own weekend meetings as a counterpoint to the ECOWAS summit in Abuja, Nigeria. This comes amid further moves to cut military and other ties with former colonizer France and other Western powers. On Sunday, the U.S. military withdrew from Niger air base in the capital, Niamey, ahead of its upcoming withdrawal from a $110 million U.S. drone base. Niger ordered U.S. troops to depart the country in March. Two top Democratic senators have called on the Justice Department to open a criminal probe into Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas on potential violations of ethics, false statement, and tax laws. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island and Ron Wyden of Oregon are urging Attorney General Merrick Garland to appoint a special counsel to investigate Thomas's failure to disclose lavish gifts, luxury travel, and other perks gifted to Thomas by wealthy friends, including billionaire conservative megadonor Harlan Crow. The senator said in a statement, no government official should be above the law. Yet another Democratic Congress member has called on President Biden to bow out of the presidential race following his disastrous performance in a debate against Donald Trump last month, when Biden appeared disjointed, confused, and frequently lost his train of thought. On Tuesday, New Jersey Congressmember Mikey Sherrill said in a statement, quote, because I know President Biden cares deeply about the future of our country, I'm asking that he declare he won't run for re-election, will help lead us through a process toward a new nominee, she said. It was at least the 10th such call by a House Democrat. Meanwhile, members of the uncommitted movement of Democratic voters have asked the Democratic National Committee to adopt a statement critical of Israel's war on Gaza. The movement will be sending 29 uncommitted delegates to the Democratic National Convention in Chicago next month and is preparing to back a Democratic presidential candidate who supports a permanent ceasefire in Gaza and an arms embargo on Israel's war and occupation. This is Elian Farhat, an uncommitted delegate from Minnesota.
People of all faiths and backgrounds got into the uncommitted movement is because what we saw was because of a flawed policy in Gaza with incredible pain and suffering and death and horror on Palestinian people. The multiracial, multigenerational coalition we need to beat Donald Trump is fraying. And the stakes of the November election are too high for anyone to sit this one out.
In Wisconsin, a federal judge has banned protesters from marching through a security zone at the Republican National Convention, which will be hosted in Milwaukee next week. The ACLU of the Coalition to March on the RNC 2024 filed the lawsuit against Milwaukee, saying the city's restrictions on protesters violates free speech rights. The suits was dropped following news of the ruling. Democracy Now! Will be in Milwaukee next week. Watch our extended daily two-hour broadcast Monday through Friday. It's called Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency. We'll be in Milwaukee next week and in Chicago for another week of two-hour daily broadcasts for the Democratic National Convention. And a warning to our audience, this story contains graphic descriptions of violence. In more news from Wisconsin, community advocates are demanding justice for Devante Mitchell, a 43-year-old black father who died last month after he was violently pinned to the ground by four security guards outside a hotel in downtown Milwaukee. Footage shows the security guards pressing Mitchell down on his stomach with their hands and knees as Mitchell is heard crying out for help. The incident came after Mitchell was pushed out of the Hyatt Regency Hotel, located just a few minutes from where thousands of Republicans will gather to nominate Donald Trump for president at the RNC next week. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump, who's representing Mitchell's family, said a witness report reported seeing one of the guards also striking Mitchell on the head with an object. Mitchell's death has been compared to the police murder of George Floyd in 2020. Mitchell's family said he suffered from mental health issues and depression following his father's death in 2016 and described him as loving. The medical examiner's office determined the preliminary cause of death is homicide, but the investigation is ongoing. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As ceasefire talks are being held in Doha, Israel's intensifying its war in Gaza. Earlier today, the Israeli military ordered the full evacuation of all civilians from Gaza City. Al Jazeera reports Tuesday was the deadliest day in Gaza in weeks. At least 30 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike on a school housing displaced Palestinians near Khan Yunis. Most of the dead were reportedly women and children. It was the fourth Israeli attack on a school over the past 4 days in Gaza. Al Jazeera aired footage showing children playing soccer at the school at the time of the blast. The Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza decried the attack as a, quote, heinous massacre against displaced citizens, unquote. Eyewitnesses said the Israeli attack resulted in body parts flying through the air.
We were sitting safely in the afternoon, somewhat settled. Suddenly, a missile was fired. I'm not sure what kind of missile, F-16 or not, Apache. The schools were overcrowded with people and the street was full too. Suddenly a missile hit and destroyed the whole place. There were bodies and body parts. Bodies flew. Body parts flew in the air. I don't know how to describe it. I can't. People sitting safely, selling goods, making a living to provide for their children. No one. I don't know what happened. Why would they hit us like that?
We go now to Gaza, where we're joined by journalist Akram Al-Satari. He's joining us from outside the Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. I know that there's a time delay, but Akram, if you can describe exactly what has happened and what's being described as the deadliest 24 hours in a number of weeks.
Yes, indeed, the deadliest 24 hours in a number of months rather than weeks. Heavy bombardment taking place in different parts of the Gaza Strip, including Gaza North, Gaza City, Gaza Central Area, Khan Yunis area, and also Rafah area. In Khan Yunis, only 27 people out of 56 people who were killed in the last 24 hours were killed in that area. One shelter that was used by hundreds of families and one area that was used by families as a shelter outside of the school were targeted by three missiles that brought to that heavy loss amongst them. 27 children, women, elderly people and youth as well were killed. More than 52 other people were killed. And Nusayrat area also 24 hours or so ago witnessed a large-scale incident where around 19 Palestinians were killed and around 70 others were injured. Rafah also have been witnessing large-scale bombardment that has been taking the lives of tens of Palestinians. Gaza central area also, besides Al-Nusayrat, Al-Burej also witnessed a targeting incident where around 9 people were killed in a heavy, crowded area in the middle of Al-Burej refugee camp, where thousands of displaced people were there and were trying to secure their very basic needs amidst that very critical situation, characterizing a great deal of lack to the essential supplies for the people who are in need. So the bombardments are technically everywhere in the Gaza Strip. The people who are bearing the brunt of those bombardments are the Palestinian displaced people and the Palestinians from Khan Yunis, Rafah, Gaza Central Area, Gaza City and the North, who have been asked also to move from their areas. In Khan Yunis area, around 250,000 Palestinians were asked to head from the eastern part of the city to the western side of the city. In Gaza, around 300,000 Palestinians are already asked by the Israeli forces to leave the Gaza City and head south toward Deir al-Balah area, in Khan Yunis and Rafah. So overall tense situation that has been exacerbated by the Israeli measures followed and by the adverse development taking place, not only because of the bombardment, but rather because of the very large scale displacement that reminds the Palestinians of the very first days of the war and even worse than that.
Can you tell us, Akram, about the reports that flyers are being dropped all over Gaza City, telling everyone to leave, what exactly this means? We are seeing that the Palestinian Red Crescent has said its teams are receiving dozens of humanitarian distress calls from residents in Gaza City where the ambulances and medics are not able to enter because the Red Crescent described the intensity of the bombardment of the area. What is happening in Gaza City?
Yes, the intensity of the bombardment in that area, Gaza area, is coupled with the requests that were made by the Israeli forces, asking around 400,000 Palestinians who are living in Gaza, including also the internally displaced people, to head south. And they were describing the route to head south, and they were saying that Salah al-Din Street and also another al-Rashid Street area are the safe routes for the Palestinians to make it to the announced humanitarian shelters and routes as described by the Israeli occupation forces, while unfortunately there's no safe haven in Gaza, no one safe, no place safe according to the description that was made by the Commissioner General of the UN. That means a new round of massive displacement is planned by the Israeli occupation forces, not only in Gaza City, where 400,000 Palestinians are staying, but also in Khan Yunis area, where is a quarter a million of Palestinians that were asked to move to the western parts of the city. So those actions are now leading to more despair, leading to more displacement, and are likely also to lead to more destructions once the Israeli occupation forces start the destruction in that area, which they have started at a very large scale in Al-Shaja'iyya, in Al-Sabra, in Al-Daraj, in Al-Tufah, and also in Al-Saraya area, which are main neighborhoods in Gaza, including the Gaza Old City, that is an hysterical place that has already been targeted by the Israeli occupation forces and a significant proportion of it was destroyed.
I'm looking at a piece in The Guardian describing footage broadcast by Al Jazeera showing children playing football in the school's yard when a sudden boom shook the area, prompting shouts of "a strike, a strike." If you can explain what happened when the kids were playing soccer.
Well, apparently, obviously, they were targeted by the Israeli occupation forces. This is one of the incidents that was documented by the cameras. Unfortunately, 100 more incidents are taking place without the camera being there to capture the horror that has been caused, the destruction that has been brought to the life and to the facilities, and the death that has taken the life. Families were divided. According to one of my friends who was there, who was an emergency doctor, they received 27 bodies of one family, and the only surviving member of the family was a 26 days old child. So many incidents are taking place, many lives are wasted, and when you look at the condition and the context and the way people were living when they were targeted, you come to a conclusion that people were just not doing anything. They were not engaging in combat activities. They were not carrying arms. They're not fighting. They're just plain people who are seeking some comfort, some rest and respite to their life amidst that ever-escalating military situation, amidst that ever-exacerbating humanitarian crisis. They were trying to play together, I mean the children. They were trying to find some time of peace when their life was targeted and they were ending up dead. And I think also most of them, not only dead, but some of them are losing their limbs and end up like physically disabled, some of them losing their sight, which some of the people were reporting about. Some of the children who were injured were losing their eyes and losing their ability to sense things. So one of them lost their four limbs, a child, a baby boy who lost his four limbs. So you can imagine, and I don't think you can ever be able to imagine the level of distress that has been caused. People who have been communicating with the Palestinian Red Crescent Society are people who were trapped under the rubble of their homes. The story of Al-Hilu family that was targeted in Gaza City, and around 19 family people were killed, and the only survivor who was 19 years old was communicating with the Palestinian Red Crescent and was telling them that he cannot help his family, and that his mother was killed, and that she is on his lap, and that his father is screaming from under the rubble and seeking help, and his brothers and sisters were also seeking help by screaming, and no one could help them because the Palestinian Red Crescent Society cannot go to those areas where some fighting is taking place. Otherwise, they would be targeted. And we have seen different incidents where the Palestinian Red Crescent Society teams were targeted, and even international organizations like the World Central Kitchen and also some other organizations, the UNRWA, were targeted, and they ended up losing some of their staff.
Yes, UNRWA, their headquarters were hit. UNRWA Commissioner General Philippe Lazzarini wrote today, four schools hit in the last 4 days. Since the war began, two-thirds of UNRWA schools in Gaza have been hit. Some were bombed out, many severely damaged. Schools have gone from safe places of education and hope for children to overcrowded shelters and often ending up a place of death and misery. 9 months in, under our watch, the relentless, endless killings, destruction, and despair continue. Gaza is no place for children. The blatant disregard of international humanitarian law cannot become the new normal. Ceasefire now before we lose what is left of our common humanity. Again, those are the words of the UNRWA Commissioner General Philippe Lazzarini, the Palestinian Relief and Works Agency. Your comment on the ground, Akram, and if you can also respond to whether people on the ground are hearing about the negotiations that are taking place. Well, it was in Cairo, now in Doha, around a ceasefire.
Landslide, majority of the Palestinians are disconnected from the external world. They don't have internet, they don't have electrical supplies, they don't have access to any communication whatsoever. So unfortunately, most of them in the past were extremely interested. They were trying to go to the places where they have electrical supplies because due to the having the PV panels or where they have been following the news. But now, people are extremely busy surviving. They have been linking any talk about the negotiation and any analysis about any breakthrough when it comes to negotiation and a swap deal with the major developments taking place on the ground. Like whenever they talk about negotiation, they understand that the Israeli government is going to start a large-scale military step where they would be targeting Gaza. And the very same thing practically is happening. They were talking about the negotiation in Doha and Cairo in the media. And then the day after, the Israeli occupation forces started that large-scale ground operation in Gaza, and now they are asking 400,000 Gazans to leave Gaza City and move to the south of Gaza. And they're asking 250,000 to move from the first half of Khan Yunis to the other half of Khan Yunis. So people are pessimistic about the intention of the Israeli government to do anything whatsoever that can eventually lead to a ceasefire or to rest or respite or peace or comfort or safety or whatever things that have to do with the rest of your humanitarian soul that has been haunted by the ongoing bombardment and loss and fear of imminent death. So Palestinians are struggling. Unfortunately, most of them don't have access to the internet, so they cannot continue following the news about the developments, but they have been seeing the developments with their own eyes. I believe the ones who were killed in Khan Yunis, the 27 family members, and also the 52 others who were injured in a shelter that was supposed to be protected according to the international law and UNRWA facility, they fully understand now that it is just a talk till something tangible happens, till some safety, sense of safety happens to them, until they can retrieve some normalcy to their life. They made the statements that are made by Commissioner General of the UNRWA are appreciated by the Palestinians. They have been seeing the UNRWA struggling for the sake of providing them with a life-saving medication, food, water, and non-food items. However, they understand that Israeli occupation is not listening to any call except the call of war and fighting. And they understand on the ground that they have been the prime target of that unleashed power and fire that is targeting them. As you can hear in the background, more injured people, as you, presumably, are coming to the hospital, and the bombardment is still ongoing. People are still killed, and they understand that nothing serious has been done to stop that, neither by the international community nor by the different UN agencies that are mandated to condemn the atrocities and to stop them as well and hold accountable the perpetrator of those.
I want to thank you so much for being with us, Akram al-Satari, journalist based right now, speaking to us outside the Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Please be safe yourself. The latest news out of Gaza when it comes to journalists, well, the Gaza government media office says over 150 Palestinian journalists have been killed. Most recently, Palestinian journalist Sadi Madu Souk and Ahmed Sukar, killed Friday following an Israeli raid that targeted a home of the Madouk family in the Daraj neighborhood of Gaza City. The New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists says well over 100 media workers have died since October 7th. They are saying, the Committee to Protect Journalists, that the killing of journalists in Gaza makes it the deadliest period since CPJ, the Committee to Protect Journalists, began gathering data in 1992. This is Democracy Now! Coming up, Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, Palestinian physician, activist, politician. He's usually in Ramallah, but is in Washington, D.C. right now. Stay with us.